103.9 FM, WOZO Radio, Knoxville.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Okay.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio, our on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is April 17th at 7 o'clock, 2019. If it's not that date and time where you are, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast of this show. I'm Dr. Five, and as usual, we have Wombat on the phone. Hello, Woo! Wombat.
What's up? I'm the Wombat! I hope everyone's doing a great week, and we got guests on the line. I'm super excited about today's show.
And here's our guest, Carrie. Can you say hi?
Hi, everybody.
Okay.
So, welcome to the show.
Boo! Thanks for having me on.
Very great.
Welcome anyway. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Mm. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show here in Knoxville?
Oh, yeah.
It has been for almost 9 years.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that one, Matt?
Yeah, I'm really excited with it. I think they're making the best season that's been around since Power Rangers RPM.
Season?
It's really, really great. They got a black Red Ranger. I really like it. All the actors are really great. The Yellow Ranger's a ball of sunshine. Blue actor is a little bit stiff, but he's really getting into the roles. I'm really excited about this season. I think Beef Morpher is going to be incredible.
Still think you need to search for the proper show. It's been broadcasting for over 9 years. And after the break, we'll tell you how you can watch that as well. It's going on right now. As a matter of fact, it starts at 6:30 and we start at 7. So we're hoping you'll TiVo it and watch it after we come back from the break. And in spite of what Steve Martin will have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there. And you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program. And generally on the station as they are in rotation.
Nice. And we got a couple of great songs coming up this break, too.
Today's topic is, how you want to carry that on? You brought the topic with you, didn't you?
Yo, Cario, what do you got?
Yeah, so today I wanted to talk about street epistemology and specifically how it can be used to further science education. So from my background, I was a molecular biologist, and then I taught middle and high school science. And so now I'm working in science educational technologies. So what really interests me is you have this fantastic tool that it seems way better than anything else for convincing people to be a little more open to science, be a little more open to questioning their beliefs. And what are the best ways to go about that? And can we utilize that in teaching science, in making, you know, a more educated populace?
All right. So what brings you here for that? Because you're talking to us lugs here.
Well, I came across one of your Let's Chat videos on the philosophy subreddit.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. The title of the post was like, this is a fantastic example of how you should actually convince someone of an argument. And I clicked on it, and I found it to be fairly true. Like the conversation that you had was really eye-opening to me.
Wow.
And then watching all your videos and seeing these techniques that you used over and over again, you were putting into practice these things that I had been thinking about but hadn't really been able to put into words yet until I saw you use them over and over again.
So I can get some context then, you're saying like on Reddit, sometimes I post some of my videos that I do as like my street epistemology hobby. And street epistemology, mm-hmm. for anyone listening in, is just like a cool way of talking to people about really sensitive topics without coming off as a jerk or making either side defensive, keeping both sides open and willing to critically think. Both Larry and I, both Doubter 5 and I, have tried out street epistemology. And we even went up to Nashville, I think, early last month, like late into last month. And had, you know, seminars. We were breaking up into groups and teaching people how to do it. It was really great. And I put some of the stuff on Reddit, and some of them are more popular than others. So it, to mixed results, the things on Reddit
sure.
goes.
Anything you put on Reddit is going to be mixed, depending on the date and time you put it in there.
Exactly, right? Or whatever the mods felt like that particular morning or whatever.
Right.
But I will say this. It's the number of comments that I've gotten back for the people who do comment have always been very meaningful, and people who are really interested in what the heck is SE about. Because it seems like it could be really effective, particularly for atheists to talk to religious people, or even vice versa. We haven't seen the vice versa done well yet, but we're working on it. And so I think the video that you might be referencing to begin with is like how to ask questions, which is a conversation I had with Jacob when I was still in Kentucky. But I guess you wanted it. What do you want to get out of this kind of conversation, or what kind of questions did you have about SE, or do you think it's valuable for you? Like, what's your religious background, or what do you think you can apply it to?
Yeah, for me, what it seems really useful for, and what I'm interested in, is essentially combating pseudoscience and like pseudoscientific beliefs. And so that's something that I've ran up against a lot, being a science educator. Like occasionally you'll get students who don't believe in evolution, and that's that one really gets to me. I don't know why. It's not a rational thing. I just get irrationally annoyed when someone doesn't believe in evolution.
Why?
Yeah.
Or why, if you don't mind asking, just as from your position, you mind expanding on that a little bit?
I guess it's to me, it's something that, because I studied molecular biology, it's so none of biology makes sense without the light of evolution, is the common phrase, and that's definitely true, and it's something that has been politicized, but like in other fields, people don't like get angry when you say like quarks exist. They're like, oh no, quarks don't exist. That doesn't happen, but it does happen with evolution.
Well, I agree, and I think it's because of, I chalk it up to willful ignorance.
Yeah.
The information is there. They are willfully taking a stance that they're not going to learn it. They're not going to believe it, no matter how much evidence is out there and how much it's available, the information is available to them.
And that sort of, not to expand on this, but like that sort of attitude gets passed down generationally to where you have kids who've never really been exposed to what real evolution is, just the caricature of what it is from, you know, a very willfully ignorant parent that says, oh, it's just monkeys banging rocks against each other. And the kid's like, oh, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. And they'll continue with their lives with that impression of what evolution is. And it's just really unfortunate to see, like, how memes of, like, how people think about things can be passed down. Why do you think, Cariote, that kids that don't want to believe in evolution, why do you think they have that kind of presumption or particular attitude?
Oh, that down.
Yeah, yeah. My son lost you during
sorry.
But anyway, go ahead.
Why do you think kids don't want to believe in evolution? What do you think is the foundation behind that attitude?
Well, I think it is definitely has a religious basis that is passed down, like you were saying. But I also think that it's a somewhat complicated topic to get all the nuance and learn it all. And so if you're someone who already isn't that very into school, then you're more likely to, I guess, rally against it. But it's mostly religious based.
Yeah, and especially if it's kids, you can know that if they don't believe in evolution, or if they go to school and speak out against it, it's because of their parents' religion. Mm-hmm. It's what they've been taught at home.
Right.
And that's just another strike against religion.
Yeah, and I found that for most people who go in not believing about evolution, if you teach it well enough, they'll be like, oh yeah, of course, there's no other possible way that life operates. But then there's some kids who, no matter how much information you tell them, they won't come around to believing it. And yeah. And that's why I was thinking about SE, and when I saw your videos using it, I was like, oh, this is the technique that you use on those kids. SE seems like the optimum tool for talking to people who are so entrenched beyond any use of reason, really.
Well, that's why I started the conversation in a non-confrontational way.
Yeah.
That would hopefully help them get past their logical roadblocks.
There you go. I love the way you phrased that. I'd also even say, you know, there are religious people that believe in evolution only in the sense of intelligent design, which is sort of like a post ad hoc rationalization. What do you think about that? Would that be suffice? Would you be satisfied with that?
As in they believe in evolution, but they also believe in an intelligent design.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Sure. Because I mean, I can think of atheists that probably don't believe in evolution just because they believe in some other weirder thing, but there could definitely be religious people, Christians, most hard hitting Bible Belt people that say, oh yeah, evolution's a thing, but this is what's behind it. And that way, when the scientists figure out stuff, I can still keep believing in my God. Would you be satisfied if they just left it there?
Yeah. So like Francis Collins, I think, is kind of like that, right? The head of the NIH. I would say for me, it's really important for people to know the separation between what's science and what isn't. And so like if a student says they think that the universe itself was designed, for me, it's important to say, well, that's not a scientific question because we can't do experiments about it. Like, you can have a logical argument about it, but you can't have a scientific argument about it because science requires experimentation. So,
And repeatability, which we can't do. We can't do that with universes.
Unless there's a multiverse.
Oh no, here we go.
Yeah, so for me, that's where I'm at, is to know what's a scientific claim and what isn't, and know when you're making a religious statement. Know when your belief is belief and not scientifically supported. That's what to me is most important.
What's the harm if they just continue to believe that the universe was designed based on scientific principles? They still understand scientific principles and they're not hurting anybody. What's the problem?
Well, if you think that, then I think you don't understand scientific principles because you don't understand the philosophy of science.
Oh, tell me about it.
Well, so,
or at least the method. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I think actually the philosophy of science is something that's like criminally undertaught, even to people who are scientists. When I was going through and studying molecular biology, there was never a time where they were like, this is the history of the philosophy of science. It was more like we would go over this scientific method and we would talk about experimental design, but we wouldn't talk about the critical thinking that went into
getting the results, the resulting formulas that we have, the observations we have. We don't talk about the method. We just talk about the conclusions that we have or found.
Well, I think we talk about the method of the experimentation, but we don't talk about the philosophical underpinnings of it.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Which is that science is kind of based on this axiom that what our senses tell us is real to some extent.
Reliable, anyway, mostly.
I like reliable.
Yeah, mostly reliable.
I like mostly.
Yeah, and one thing that people don't understand when they say your senses aren't reliable, you know, that we have to rely on the Bible or whatever. What alternative do we have? Even our eyes tell us what the Bible says. There are senses. You take away reliability on senses, you might as well throw away every book and every sound.
I can tell you a really good alternative, but it's not necessarily conclusive. It's just I don't know what the answer is, and I'll wait until I have better methods to figure it out. And that's actually a really good place to be at, and keeps yourself open-minded until you do get better information. And the best thing about that position is it keeps you from holding bad ones.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's totally true. And that is also one of the biggest foundations of science is really because it comes from epistemology, not street epistemology, but like regular epistemology. When you go into that section of philosophy, it's what do we know and how do we know it? And that is probably the biggest philosophical foundation to science, where it says, like, we actually don't know anything 100% for certain. Like, anything, any theory in science can be improved upon, given enough data. So it's kind of, the default position is, I don't know.
You know what? It's the basis for SE when I go out with my goal is just to highlight the value of I don't know as a reliable position to start from as when you're trying to learn things. And if there's someone out there who believes something, even if it's, hey, this is a very reliable scientific process, you know, thousands of different people support it, it's backed by evidence, great. You could be really, really confident that it's true, but how about we at least be open-minded to the idea that it could be improved in the future and at least say, hey, I don't know how it's going to improve in the future, but this is the best thing that I have right now, and I'm open-minded to more stuff coming in the future. And if you have something that's not true, like if you have like a belief that evolution is completely bunk or anything like that, that same mindset is really good because it's just a case of it's not so much that I've picked this team. It's just that I care about what's true. This is the best thing that I have, but I'm open-minded to know more things that are more reliable in the future. And naturally, I will progress myself to the more reliable method if I'm presented with it. And
sure.
I think instead of teaching – here's my two cents. Instead of teaching kids that they're wrong, teach them the tools that they need to figure out how to be really, really right. And if you show them, for example, hey, I don't know, it's a great place to be. That's a fair answer to be. And let's just keep looking for more reliable stuff. Let's have a standard of evidence that can like support our really important beliefs and knowledge and stuff like that. People who genuinely appreciate that will naturally gravitate to the most true thing. And even if it's not something that we agree is true, that's a worthwhile effort because they might inform us something about something we've had a misconception about later on. And I think if we're all working towards figuring out true things, that's better than just us teaching them the values that we appreciate the most. And I think that's probably the key difference between like atheism versus like a religious aspect where you're just shoving a dogma to people. What do you think?
Right. A demanding belief.
Yeah.
Without like, evidence.
Believe this evolution thing. Or how about, hey, why don't we believe what's true? Turns out evolution is really reliable. Let's stick with that for a while. Let's improve
it. Yeah.
Have you run across people having too lax of a standard of belief? Standard of evidence with your SE.
Oh,
like people.
Even Larry's ran into that. He's talking about cognitive dissonance. Have you ever ran into that, Larry?
Oh, sure. I did a whole article on it on my website. Digitalfreethought.com. Just go in there and look for cognitive dissonance. Do a search, and you should be able to come up with the article.
Nice.
Yeah. So you're saying these people, they have too low of a standard of the standard of evidence. Therefore, they believe these conflicting ideas and they hold those in their brain.
Right.
Well, they also compartmentalize their information. You know, like you have somebody who studies evolution. Let's say you're an evolutionary psychologist, you know, biologist, but then you're also a Christian. You simultaneously hold the idea that Adam and Eve are real and sin is real because they disobeyed God in the Garden of Eden. But at the same time, you know that can't possibly be true because, you know, evolution didn't have an Adam or an Eve. And But you got to believe. You have to believe the religious message, or you won't go to heaven. So, you know, they maintain these two things in their mind simultaneously, which is not a healthy mental state to be in. Mm.
Have you heard of that before, Cariot?
Like how people compartmentalize these things.
Yeah.
And yeah.
To me,
yeah. I'm
saying, to me, it speaks of like similar to what both of you guys are saying, just combined, just different standards of evidence. If I have two different philosophies as far as coming to true conclusions, one's going to be better than the other, and tends to be the case that one's way better than the other. So why am I using one with a lower standard when I should just use the higher standard one across the board and be satisfied with I don't know until I have an even better standard to replace that with? I feel like it's an interesting issue that's more common than we suspect, particularly even in ourselves, because I bet you there's still stuff that I walk around with a double standard. What do you think? There's anything like that for you?
Oh, absolutely. We're so irrational and so emotion based that is absolutely true for everyone. I know that when I hold an opinion and I'm having an argument, and then I go look up to see like, oh, who was right in that argument? If there's evidence in favor of me, I'm more likely to believe that.
Sure,
for sure. Yeah.
So what do you think is a good way to get around that?
I think that's a tough question because it's so innate to just being human. Mm. But knowing is half the battle, no. Right? Knowing that you...
So you're so corny.
But I think that's true. Like, if you can identify that in yourself, then you can begin to combat knowing that you're just filled with all these biases, and you have to really go out of your way to search as hard as you can for the opposing opinion that you have on any opinion you have. Otherwise, you're living in your own filter bubble, the filter bubble that your brain makes for you.
Sure, yeah, that filter bubble your brain makes for you is really dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And the Google bubble too.
Oh man, Google bubble's like second matter. On the list. You know about the Google bubble?
Yeah.
Is that Google is giving you results that it thinks that you'll like?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
So if you're conservative, all the stuff that you receive, you know, from the internet, feedback is going to be conservative and liberal, you know, whatever.
Of course.
You very seldom does Google challenge your thinking.
Right. It's in the sense of like, if you're a chef and you search for Apple, you're going to get like Apple recipes and pictures of apples. But if you're like a business guy and you search for Apple, you're going to get the Apple stock quote first. And like, and updates on the business practices and stuff like that. So like, if Google pegs that this guy's an atheist, you're gonna get like weird little science blurbs. Like, oh yeah, did you know we took new pictures of the black hole? Isn't that great? But if you're religious and you like, and Google knows it, it'll be like, hey, it's another day in the glory of God. Buy these shoes. It's really and that's just on the, and anyone can look that up. That's a very typical thing that a lot of advertisement sites do. But it's something we passively do with our thinking on a 24/7 basis sort of thing. And the scary part is the longer we go with that unnoticed, the more entrenched we become in our particular perspectives, such to the point where when someone comes up and says, hey, you know, evolution is actually true, and I've went my entire life believing that it's not, it is a fundamentally hard thing for me to understand why someone would disagree with me on that. Because I spent my entire life being supported by people who love me, who don't believe in evolution. I went to school with teachers who don't believe in evolution. I've raised kids without believing in evolution. It all makes perfect sense to me. Who is this guy to challenge me on that? And I feel like when you challenge a person on a deeply held belief, you're not just specifically challenging them, but their entire history at the same time too. It's like,
and family.
Yeah. Social structure. And then like, what kind of benefit would they get out of it? Like, if I continue to believe this, I still have I might have a wife, I might have kids. I might have like a standing in my social circle that's very religious. Am I going to afford risking all of that so that I can believe what this guy tells me? Like, how do you package a really controversial, fundamentally changing belief in a way that a person can look at it and honestly approach it with certain sort of honesty where they have to realize, maybe I don't know the answers. Maybe I should start asking myself some good questions.
Yeah, that's the magic bullets goal that we're all looking for. You know, how do we broach the subject in such a way that they will be receptive to it? You know, the concept of evolution as being real and true and having a mountain of evidence behind it, when you know they're geared and programmed to fight the concept.
Right. Cario, what do you got?
Yeah, and you guys are totally right, where people feel personally attacked. I've heard this thing where when you're arguing against God, you're arguing against that person's version of God, so you're arguing, they feel like you're arguing against them. So this brings me to a somewhat off topic, but I think interesting thought is, do you guys think that they're like, what is the evolutionary benefit of religion? Like, why is it so prevalent, and why did it evolve?
Oh, wow.
What, religion itself?
Yeah, religious beliefs in general.
Okay, well, way back when, I think even before society, I think there were people who would try to, first of all, where did thunder, what happens when thunder happens, you know, or lightning, mm-hmm. or, you know, natural events we could not explain. There might be somebody who comes up with an explanation, like, you know, there's somebody in the clouds, because when we hear certain strange noises on Earth, we find out it's somebody around the corner doing something weird. So we project it into the heavens or up on a mountain or wherever we can't go to verify it. And it turns out that the people who make up the best stories get the most followers. You know, people who get the most power in their little society, in their tribe or wherever. That would be the first time that, like, witch doctors came up. And I think the whole clergy concept from the very beginning grew out of that type of thing. Being able to explain the unexplained to people who are gullible enough to believe their explanations. But that's just me.
Right. So you think that with an understanding of the world and with science, that there's no benefit left to religion, because it can all be, we can explain thunder now.
I wouldn't take the, you know, go that far and say there is no benefit.
Right.
But the benefits outweigh the problems, or the
problems outweigh the benefits.
Yeah. I think that it does. Yes. We can go into that. I've, you know, written whole articles on the problems of religion, but, I don't think that, I think it's time has come to recognize the fact that the problems outweigh the benefits, and work to finding out why and eliminating them as best we can from our society.
Yeah. And just as
through education and argument.
And we have,
I'm certainly.
And we have religions that don't necessarily revolve around a God anyway. So the idea of like an atheistic based religion where there's no central dogma or God that you have to worship and have to believe these certain lists of rules, and maybe spend more time, you know, appreciating each other, taking care of the earth, learning science, advancing causes of humanity and philanthropy. There's definitely spaces for that. So lots of room for religion to grow. Hey guys, we're at the bottom of the hour. How about we break for some music? So listen, we're going to come back after this quick break. Right now we have Quiet Company coming up. We love Quiet Company here on this channel. We're playing Are You a Mirror? And we'll come back right after this break. This is 103.9 Wozo Radio. Hold on. There's a little Free Thought Radio Hour. Let's go.
Oh, little baby, you are fragile and weak. So I will hold you till you fall asleep. I look inside you and I see myself. I look inside you and I see myself. So I will love you. I
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation
at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
Welcome back. I'm Dotter 5, and this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, April 17th, and if it's not, you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast of this show. Okay, let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. Founded in 2002, we're in our 17th year. ASK has over 920-something members now, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheists.org, or you can go directly to Meetup or Google and just search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday between usually about 5:30 to 7:30 at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City in Knoxville, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one.
Start one.
Start one. That's right. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building. If that's too much to remember, go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. There's also Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a few years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in God but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. However, they only meet once a month, which is on the fourth Sunday in the World's Fair Park at the International Building, I believe. Do a search for Sunday Assembly Knoxville. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the Knoxville Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it almost every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of their shows at YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved in the TV show or this radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup or an RET meeting and talk to us about it. You can be our next co-host or guest. And we're back, ready to continue our topic. Ty, you want to lead us into it?
Yeah, we're here joining with our friend Cariote. He is aspiring, generically named YouTube interview channel. That's talking about the sciences and what we can do to better improve our communication skills, helping other people to learn principles and the philosophy behind the scientific methods that we hold so dear. I'm thinking of a really cool thing that he asked in the last half of the show, which was, what is the evolutionary benefit of religion in the past? And if you were to ask me as like a biochemist, I'm thinking about this as well on an evolutionary spectrum, but we work better as a society. There's a societal advantage work when people work together. And it also helps us to have a good means of communicating with each other. And what I found with religion, that particularly in like the past, is that it gives a consistent message that can rally a lot of people to work with each other. That could definitely be beneficial compared to smaller tribes or groups that don't have as, that have more conflicting points of view or act on a more individualistic nature. This large team of people who all agree on one thing, who are willing to die for one thing, can really make a great effort towards survival and getting resources and lasting a lot longer than people who don't believe in their religion. So there's definitely that benefit, I think. Cariote, what do you think are some advantages, and what do you think of that idea?
So to recap what you just said, is that because their work, they all have a shared united belief, it helps them progress their goals, get food, and survive, is what you're saying.
In a
right?
world without Facebook or Twitter messages, where you can all tweet out like one thing and then show up and flash mob some, you know, Hot Topic or whatever kids do these days, Instagram, I don't know. But what religion does is basically say, hey, this is what we believe, this is what our goals are, this is what's going to happen to us, everybody be happy, and now do these things. And that's a really, really, that's a compelling reason for why, at least to me, to why it's been so successful. And that there's probably a cultural memory behind it where people just inherently trust a religion that they're raised in because it's been so effective in maintaining their, you know, genetics across, you know, multiple generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, I think religion has evolved, but not through DNA, but through neuron patterns that have
what?
That. Yeah, yeah. So ideas also are an evolutionary process where there's selection for them, and they reproduce you mostly verbally, right? You pass them along. And so ideas evolve as sure. well. And so I think religion is an idea. And so a religion that helps someone survive will generally get passed along. And so there's this evolutionary selection for ideas. And a religion that helps that to be passed on will continue to be passed on, like having more kids, for example. We see this in like Mormonism, Catholicism.
Yeah,
That's a great evolutionary strategy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's a religion called Jainism, which preaches don't have sex and don't procreate ever. And there are very few Jainists. So I can definitely see a correlation there.
Yeah, and in terms of what benefits it provides socially, I think that there can be really strong social benefits. Like, there's that stereotype of the overachieving Mormon family, right? Mm-hmm. Where everyone's happy, and all their kids are perfect. I think there are ideas that can be embedded within religion of like working hard and doing those things that can also be, you know, very beneficial. So what I'm interested in terms of this topic is how can we take those like the good ideas that are in those religions and then bring them to people who are secular.
Oh, this is really interesting then. So what would you say are like the top three best ideas of religion?
Of any religion?
Yeah, like what's unique to religion that's really beneficial to the point where we should share it, like that because it's unique to religion?
Well, I don't think that they're unique to religion. I think you can still have them in a secular context, like being kind to other people and treating them how they want to be treated.
Well, sure, yeah. It just takes human compassion and empathy.
Sure, I wouldn't doubt that. Is there anything unique?
Start a new moral.
Is there anything like that special with religion that's worth sharing that we couldn't just get without religion? Because if that's the case, then why extol any benefit from religion at all?
I guess that's a good point. I just had this thought, so I haven't brainstormed on it. I guess nothing comes off the top of my head other than the community benefits. But you can do that secularly too. But I think there is, you know, this benefit of having community you're forced to see, you know, every Sunday.
Yeah, well, this is one of the things that Christopher Hitchens always espoused. Try to name one thing that religion brings to the table, one positive, real thing. That religion brings to the table that you couldn't also get through through secular means, and nobody was able, as far as he's concerned, nobody's ever been able to come back to him with something that religion offers that couldn't also be gotten through secular society.
Right.
And you're talking about communications and community and
what about like catharsis forming. The inevitable death or seeing your family again?
Well, he addressed that because he says part of what he asked was real, actual things. We have no way of knowing if those are real and actual. I mean, we can tell people anything to make them feel better. Mm. We can lie to them to make them feel better.
Oh,
but he says, I mean, that's that's a secular thing. It can be done in this real
sure,
this
I
world,
guess, and yeah, you're right.
And it may very well be that religions are doing that.
Sure,
but he's saying you don't need religion to have a good society, and there's nothing really that you can't accomplish with that secular by secular means that is that religion claims to be able to accomplish without it.
False hope.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of them, I like making memes. One of the memes I made
he
is
makes a lot
titled
of memes.
Hope. Yeah. It's like, if you want to hope, there's nothing stopping you. You can hope for anything, any kind of afterlife that you want. Mm. Go ahead. Matter of fact, I would hope for one that doesn't have a hell in it.
Mm-hmm. I would say this too. Hey, I used to believe, you know, one of the great things about like Christianity was the music that they produced. Like Christian music, I still like. It's just really simple chords. You know, you can get really into it. It's always generally very positive, and it sounds a lot more brighter than the things that I, my other things that are on the radio. The only issue is that now I know, thanks to like this radio show, of a lot of bands that make great music that sound even almost exactly like choir or like the standard Christian pop that I grew up on, but has that, you know, secular, just like the basic humanistic point of view that is really good. In fact, the band that we just played, Quiet Company, they used to be a Christian band. And then the lead singer had a minor mental breakdown when he had his daughter and realized that he was losing his faith when he saw his new kid. And his whole band, instead of like abandoning him, stuck with him and also lost their faith too. And the record label company, the Christian radio label, decided to keep them on anyway. And so now they make atheist music under a Christian label. It's really great. And the music that they make is like, whoa, this, like, I even in the car, I drove a friend to lunch last week, and he's a Christian. He's like, oh, wow, I love this Christian song. he's writing down the name of the band. And I'm like, yeah, they're really interesting. You should, like, definitely get their album. It's really good. He's like, oh, what's the name of this band? This sounds really great. So, if you get a chance to listen to the show, Cario, because I know you can't hear the music, but when you get a chance to, check this band out. It's really good. Quiet Company.
For sure.
Another example. Go for it.
Oh, so in college, one of my roommates, she lost her religion, and then she kind of fell into like this nihilistic existential depression about thinking about how she would never see her grandmother.
Mm.
How would you guys say that we should like combat that? Like, is that a negative side effect of atheism? And if so, how should that be?
Well,
combated?
It depends. Which religion was she? If she was Catholic, then her Protestant friend would think she's in hell. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's an offset to that.
Mm-hmm.
Is she going? Do they share the same religion? And how do we know what that religion is correct? You know, every other religion thinks that they're going to hell. Every other religion that they are not is going to hell. It's just, I mean, there's comfort unless you look at the big picture.
I also like to look at the foundation. I see someone who's having a hard time transitioning out of their faith is not so much a problem of atheism, but a problem of being lied to by the religion. And based on whatever religion they're in, like as Larry was alluding to, that will affect the time that it takes for them to handle that. But what you could do as a partner is if you want to have a conversation with it, make sure it's consensual on both sides and keep it positive, because the best sort of atheism that I think is the one that's where it's open. It's like, hey, I'm an atheist. I'm not here to tell you how to live. I'm just going to live a positive lifestyle. And by you seeing me, you'll know what an atheist looks like. And that's why I think it's important for people to be open about their atheism, because people need to know what an atheist look like. They only have the impressions from religious people of what they look like. And when someone who's lost their faith sees someone like me, that gives them hope, even if it's a passive expression. Because then they know, this guy's happy, he's good. What's he all about? Can I talk to you for a quick pic? Yeah, let's have a chat, because I'm not here to sell you anything. It might be the case that some religions out there is right, but all I do is carry a good standard of evidence, and I found that that's been a really healthy way for me to live, and I'm willing to talk about that with anyone.
Hmm. Yeah, so in your opinion, it's growing pains, and part of it is that she's been told that, hey, you're going to get an ice cream at the end, but then you know, she doesn't get that. She doesn't. She realizes that maybe there is no heaven.
I wouldn't say it's growing pains. I'd say it's an actually traumatic experience. When you realize that not just the faith is wrong, but everybody around you who tells you it is also unjustified in doing so, that fundamentally changes how you see the world around you. And it automatically puts up a wall between you and everyone else that you used to love, to the point where you feel like you can't communicate with anybody. And that's one of the reasons why I got into street epistemology, just so I can break down that supposed communication wall that I felt was risen between me, my loved ones, my family, my coworkers. And I just found that knowing how to have that kind of conversation, knowing how to talk to someone about their deeply held beliefs, and then possibility even showing them, hey, maybe you don't have a good reason for believing this, or maybe I can learn some more, but ultimately we both care about true things and we can talk about that, and I can always talk to someone about, you know, wanting to come to true things together. Like, if we're all on the same side, I don't feel like there's that wall between us anymore. And I also don't feel like atheism is as big a deal as I was led to believe when I was a religious person. It just seems like the natural expression for when you don't know something. It's the natural position that feeds from my agnosticism of, hey, I don't know if a God exists or not, so I'm not going to believe in one until I have good reason to. I think that's an intellectually honest position. And if there is a God, they would have to respect that. And if they don't, that's not the God I'd want to worship either way. So I think it's like a really great position to have. And it takes a lot of stress out, but there is the stress of that social dynamic. And that, I feel, isn't just something that can necessarily grow. Like, it's something that you have to consider on a case-by-case basis. Are these people reliant on their parents to pay their rent, to house them, to feed them? Maybe it's not the best time to come out. And as painful as that can be, what we could do as atheists is support them with anonymous groups or public groups or hangouts and meetups, places where they can freely express themselves, but most importantly, show them that we are here and that we're available to them if they need us as a group, because no one likes feeling alone.
Right. And one thing we constantly have to fight is the bad speech or the maligning that we get from public figures over atheism. You're talking about just living a good life. We have to, but we also have to speak out about it, because, like, did you read in the news today about Clarence Thomas, what he said?
No.
This is a Supreme Court judge. He says, atheists can't be trusted since oaths mean nothing to them. In other words, you know, if we swear an oath in a court, or especially in his court, he's going to think we're going to be lying because we don't have any reason to keep the oath, like a god or something like that. Anyway, do a Google search on that and you'll find the article. The good news is there's also a result that just came out that says that Americans who claim no religion are just as high, just as many people, just as populous as are evangelicals and Catholics, which have been the two biggest groups in American single groups. Not all, you can't lump all religions together and then say no religion is higher, but these are the two biggest religious groups in America, and those who claim no religion are as big as them now.
I'm also going to throw one thing out too. There's that weird optimistic silver lining to everything. So, like, if a judge says atheists are terrible people, let's keep burning them, and that becomes like an outrage. If that becomes newsworthy, that's a good sign, because you go back 100 years, that wouldn't even make the front page of, like, the barbershop newsletter, because that's just so obvious. Sure. Like, why turn that into an article? Everybody knows that.
Right.
But now it's like a thing where it's like, we got to post it because I can't believe he said that. That change, that's a demonstration that we're thinking about things differently, and that different groups are beginning to have more influence with regard to
how it's newsworthy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How are atheists presented in the news? We care about that enough that we're actually able to publish stuff that a black Supreme Court guy said and put him at fault for saying, hey, look at this guy saying that. Let's talk about this for a while. I think that's a good sign. I think we're actually trending towards better society, despite the fact that we have some setbacks. We are still moving forward, and I love that.
I think the guy on what's that game show where you're supposed to say the most common phone answer, where it's like, what's something you would bring to a
family
bring in the back?
Family Feud.
Yeah, Family Feud. The host of that show, he got a lot of flack on the internet for saying essentially that the same thing where he didn't think that atheists had morals. And people came down on him really hard for that.
But it's more of a sign of like, hey, people are actually caring to stand up for atheists or bring that up into the public, you know, knowledge as a novel idea of someone doesn't like atheists. Huh, let's talk about that. That's worthwhile talking. It's not just something we take for granted anymore. And I think that's a sign that we're on the good path. So we just got to keep doing what we're doing. And I think conversations like this are a good way. I think, Carriot, I think your efforts in teaching science to kids can really benefit from a lot of stuff that we learn from SE. I would hope that you take it with an open mind, because there's that small chance, and I don't even know what the denominator on it is, so I can't tell you the probability, but there is the chance that their God's real. There is the chance that whatever they believe is true. And all you just want to have is a goal to believe in true things and a respect for standard of evidence. And I think if you can inspire that in other people, we will naturally move towards whatever the most true thing is, or at least the most reliable way to know things. And that leads us in the better direction more than not.
I would think so.
Yeah. What do you put that probability as, personally?
I have no idea, but I think that's the best answer. I think I don't know is a great answer when you don't know something. Isn't it a great answer? It's not even a no. It's like legitimately the best answer you can give.
That's true.
Moving forward, what do you think? We got like about 3 minutes left in the show. Tell me where you think you can move forward from this before we go to closing words, Carriot.
Yeah, well, I think what I've learned from you guys is really that to get someone who's really ardent against being open to scientific ideas is you just get on their level and you say, I could be wrong, you could be wrong, let's try to figure this out together. And that's the first step to opening them up to being receptive to evidence.
Sure.
And try to find common ground and then use the ground to come toward truth.
I love it. Larry, closing words, what do you got?
Oh, you know me. I try to tell people not to worry about hell because everybody's going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that souls and heavens and hells are real. And until they do, which they haven't in 2,000 years, until they prove it, don't sweat it.
Nice.
And that's been Digital Free Thought. What about you? You haven't.
Oh, no, that's it. Final words. We'll see you guys next week. That's my closing words.
Okay.
All right, see
well,
you guys.
This has been Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We'll see you next Wednesday. Take care.
Bye.
Listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.